Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, listeners. I'm very, very excited. We're doing this episode over Zoom with one of my favorite people, Hannah Overton. And I first heard about Hannah when I was doing a retreat for a church in Corpus Christi. And they said, you've got to pray for Hannah. You've got to pray for Hannah. And they told me the most amazing story of this young woman who was unjustly imprisoned and yet took that moment to share Jesus and to start a Bible study in the Texas prisons for women. So, Hannah, I'm so excited. I've wanted you from the time I started this podcast and Robin and I hosting it together. I was like, we've got to get Hannah Overton. And you know how much we've gone back and forth just to get this time with you. So, Hannah, I want you just to tell your story. And you've done this. I know you do. So let the listeners know your story.
So back in 2006, my husband and I had, the Lord laid on our heart to adopt a little boy that was in our church. I was actually pregnant with number five, and we had talked about adopting way before we had any kids, but we thought that that would be something that we would do, you know, when our kids were grown or older. But we fell in love with this little boy that was in our church, that was in classes with our girls who were 3 and 4 at the time. And that were just, they kept coming, they were coming home and they said, Andrew is looking for a forever family. Why can't we be his forever family? And you know, we were like, well, why can't we? You know, we had fallen in love with him. He was at church on Sundays. His foster mom would, you know, sometimes come to church, sometimes drop him off, but he was there, you know, on Sundays, usually for like both services and even in between. And we would often be watching him with our kids in between services and stuff. And we just were, you know, had all fallen in love with him. And so, we began to pray about how that could happen. And God just opened the doors very quickly for that to happen and for us to be able to adopt him and make him a part of our forever family. And so on Mother's Day that year, he actually moved into our home. But 5 and a half short months later, our world crumbled when our newest member to our family went home to be with Jesus. And what we, you know, had, what had been an amazing 5 months came to a pretty abrupt end. And we were both charged with capital murder in the death of our son. He died of a very rare medical condition called hypernatremia. It is very high levels of sodium in his body. So the doctors not really understanding, knowing what would cause this, it being pretty rare, did not really, just went, jumped to some conclusions and thought that maybe I had force fed him sodium and they couldn't find salt in my house. So then the next conclusion, the theory was that maybe I had force fed him 23 tablespoons of Zatarain seasoning out of a sippy cup, which is actually pretty impossible to do. If you put 23 tablespoons of Zatarain seasoning in a sippy cup, it won't come out. And to get a four-year-old to eat that, even if it could come out, would be impossible. But that was the theory. And I was then later convicted of this. And it took 7 and a half years to prove my innocence and prove what actually had happened to Andrew.
I'm just going to say here, thank you so much for coming on and sharing with us, because such a difficult story. But we know we have listeners that they need to hear this. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you for your openness and your time to come and share, because Cheryl let me know it's been such an arduous journey for you. And yet the Lord has been with
it
you.
It is an honor to be able to share because, you know, it's only by the grace of God that I'm here today. You know, without God, I would be in a psych center, I'm sure, you know, and that he took what was ashes and made something beautiful. You know, he had plans that, you know, good plans out of this. And it seemed like there was nothing that could come good out of this, you know, but he had good plans. And,
I want to say too, I don't mean to interrupt you, but you wrote your autobiography. I mean, you wrote this in a book, and could you tell the listeners the name of your book too? So that, because there are so many details because we're on a podcast we're leaving out, but hopefully we're creating an appetite so that they'll want to know more details.
Yes. So we actually don't have a complete autobiography out yet.
You're still working on it?
We have a book that is a book of my letters that I sent out while I was in prison that I sent out to the churches. And that's just letters from Hannah. And then we have a book that is written as after I came out that is called From the Inside Out. That is a book about transitioning afterwards. As I came out, I had like all the help in the world because I had lawyers who were willing to help me and churches all over the nation and, you know, family members that loved me. And, you know, I had a lot of people that were wanting to help me, but I still had a very hard transition. And without God, I don't know how people can do it. And so I wrote a book about how to lean on God through that hard transition. And, we have a transitional school here at Sendeo, and we use that book to help with that, that transition time during that discipleship school. So that book is we use it for that, but we also have it available for people who, you know, family members who may have people coming out of prison that need to understand that or want to go through it with their loved ones and trying to understand their loved ones coming out and help them transition out.
So what we can do is put this information on how to find out more in the show notes. But I think we have to go back and find out what happened.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've jumped ahead.
So I'm gonna go to this too. So I'll just say this. Hannah grew up in a Christian family. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did a podcast about another woman named Elizabeth Newman, and her book, she was from the 1800s, is Elizabeth Undaunted. Like, she just kept going forward no matter what happened. And I think that you could have Hannah Undaunted too, because you've had so many setbacks and yet you've never stopped loving or walking with Jesus. So could you tell us about some of the setbacks? I mean, the biggest one being convicted of something you did not do and going to prison. But, you know, there are those times when I think a lot of people say, you know, when that thing, as Job said, the thing which I dreaded has happened, you know?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit, because you did grow up in a Christian home.
I did. I did grow up in a Christian home. I grew up actually a missionary kid. My mom lived at Calvary Commission. It's a missions organization. She was like a stateside missionary that took care of like all the stateside affairs for missionaries all over the world. So I lived in a very sheltered environment where I'd never seen an adult hit another adult. I never heard cuss words. I was very, very, I was very much in culture shock when I went to prison. That doesn't mean that I never experienced any pain. My father was not there with us at Calvary Commission because my father did go to prison when I was young. So that was, he was not around. So that was, you know, that was hard for me because he was not there when I was young. And then, when we got married and when I was, right after we had our first child, my house burned down And
Hannah Undaunted.
Yes.
I really thought that, you know, that I was not going to make it through that. We had to move in with my mom, and we actually got totally provided in that instance as well, because there was somebody in our church who like built houses and helped us like build our house back up from 2x4s and taught my husband how to do that. And now like we have rental houses because he knows how to do that, you know, and that's how a big part of how we support ourselves in ministry. I had two miscarriages in between my first two children, and I always wanted a bunch of kids, so that was really difficult for me. And one of those miscarriages, I was like a cyst that was cancerous, and they told me I might never be able to have kids, and I might die of cancer. I had to go for 6 months every week and be tested to see if I had cancer growing in my uterus, and you know, just a lot of different crazy things. And then when I went to, you know, when I was convicted, I had multiple setbacks. I was convicted. That's huge setback. I was never expecting that. I had seen God, you know, step in so many times being raised on a missions base. I thought that God would like step in on my timing. When I really expected him to be my knight in shining armor when I wanted him to be. And when it didn't happen on my timing, I was pretty devastated and really had to work through that with God. How could he love me and let me be convicted? But he just kept reminding me that he had good plans and that he did love me and that I had to trust him. Yep. And so, I had a motion for new trial that I thought was going to be when he proved my innocence, and it wasn't. I had a evidentiary hearing that I thought would be the time when he proved my innocence. And the evidence came out that proved my innocence at that trial, but the judge decided not to give an answer at that point and kind of just washed his hands of it and gave it back to the Court of Criminal Appeals so that the Court of Criminal Appeals could make a decision, which took them years to pick up the case. So I had to go back to the prison for years and wait for them to decide to look at it. And when they looked at it, they did overturn it, but it took a while.
How long were you in prison?
A little over 7 years.
Wow.
And you had your baby, yeah, right? Number five in prison, right?
No, I was...
Before you went to prison,
right,
you had her.
Before I went to prison. She was 7 months old and nursing when I was convicted. So I left a nursing baby. And I actually, like, they let me nurse during trial. And then, like, right after I was convicted, the judge took me into his chambers and let me nurse her one last time. Oh. And then told me I'd be a really rich woman one day because he knew I was innocent, but then still had, you know, still allowed the conviction to go through.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, Hannah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow.
When did you start doing the Bible studies in prison?
So it took about 6 months after I got there. So the time that I was in, I was in the county jail for 5 months. And during that time, to be completely honest, I really struggled with God. You know, I really was, I was devastated. I was, not eating, not sleeping. Every time I went to sleep, I felt like God, I was having nightmares that one of my kids was hurting and I couldn't get to them, you know. And when I was awake, I was telling God how unfair it was. And so there was, you know, that whole time was just really me just struggling through life.
And rightly so, rightly so.
Yeah. And then I went through this time, which this is where we get our logo for our ministry. But I went through this time where I just like threw a fit, one of the biggest fits I've ever thrown in my life. Like I said, I was raised pretty sheltered, but I told God all the reasons that I felt like he was unfair and used a lot of words I'd never used before. And I wore myself out throwing things around my cell. And when I finally had worn myself out, the last thing I remember saying is I can't even see the flowers and the birds. Mm-hmm. And when I said that, I fell asleep. And, I was being such a brat that I deserved a spanking. But what I got was the grace of God, because one of my friends woke up with this intense desire to buy me flowers.
Wow.
And I remember like her telling me this story, and she said that she woke up and she just felt like God was telling her to buy me flowers. And she's like, how am I supposed to do that? You know? And so then she woke her husband up and she's like, I really feel like God wants me to buy her flowers. And her husband said, you can't buy her flowers. And they got married from two different sides of town. She had grown up on the bad side of town and he grew up on the good side of town. So she wasn't scared to go to the county jail, but he was scared to go to that part of town. And she's like, God told me to buy her flowers and take them down there tonight. And he's like, you're not going anywhere near there tonight. Go back to sleep. You ate something funny. And they had this big argument. Finally, he gave in. He's like, do whatever you want to do. Because she kept saying, God told me. And so finally, he goes back to sleep. She goes to the grocery store. She buys these flowers. And she goes down to the county jail in the middle of the night. She's like, okay, God, what am I supposed to do with these flowers? And he told her to put them in a no parking sign, to like put them in the top of the sign. Well, nobody knew that I had been moved that night before I threw my fit. I had been moved to a cell where I couldn't see the parking lot. The church had been coming regularly. My home church, Calvary Chapel of the Coastlands in Corpus, had been coming regularly and doing worship in the parking lot just to help me to know that they were there. They were supporting me. They were praying for me. And the jail was getting tired of it. They had tried to call the cops and all these different things, and it's public property, so they couldn't stop them from doing worship in the parking lot.
Wow.
And so they thought if they moved me to where I couldn't see the parking lot, maybe they would stop doing it. So they moved me to the cell where all I could see was this no parking sign.
Oh my goodness.
Of course. Of course.
Oh. And so when I opened up my eyes and looked out the window, I'm looking at these flowers on the snow parking sign. I wish that I could tell you I was as happy as I am today that God bought me flowers, but I was still being a brat. And I told God, that's not funny. I'm still in the cell.
Yeah.
But I don't need flowers. I need my kids.
Yes. Right.
But you're not going, you didn't go through anything that, or do anything that Jeremiah didn't do. Mm. Or, you're right there with the prophets. And I think that's so good, because I think that we have this misguided notion that we should be happy and accepting no matter what happens to us, and just like, we don't realize we're human and we have to process, and God is right there in the process with us. And I know you know that because the ministry that you have now, and that God allows us to process and to be angry and to say, this is not fair. And he's still loving us this entire time.
Yes, he was so gracious. So when I'm throwing a fit still, after he buys me flowers, he very quickly transferred me from that county jail to the maximum security prison where I would be spending the next 7 years. Mm. And when I got transferred, I get there, and right in front of me, right in front of the dorm where I was going to live, there's this rock. And on this rock is painted a hummingbird. And I looked at the hummingbird and I laughed to myself. Yeah. I was like, God, really? That's not even a real bird. And I'm in real prison now. And I heard this audible voice, you know, for the first time ever that I've ever heard an audible, you know, God speak in an audible voice. But I heard this audible voice say to me, but you're like that hummingbird. Mm. And I didn't know or care what that meant at that time. Mm. But over, you know, over the next couple of months, God began to just soften my heart. And I began to, you know, really wonder, well, what's a hummingbird like? What does that mean? You're like that hummingbird. And I started like looking at what hummingbirds are like and getting books from the library, what's a you know, about hummingbirds and stuff like that. And then and God gave me the scripture in Corinthians about, you know, in my weakness, you are strong, or, you know, in your weakness, I'm strong. And, I started really looking at the hummingbird, and if a hummingbird can be crushed, they are so fragile that if you just close your hand on a hummingbird, it'll be crushed. You can barely touch their wings and they'll break. But they have this huge purpose in the world. So if you don't have hummingbirds in the world, like if they went extinct, we wouldn't have enough oxygen to live.
Mm, wow.
So because they do so much for pollinating that we need hummingbirds. And so what God told me when I was looking at all that was that that he had a big purpose for me in his hands. That in his hands I would be safe, and he had a big purpose for me. That I might feel fragile, and that I could be crushed at any moment. But if I was in his hands, I would be safe, and that I had a big purpose. And
so beautiful. So it's just so like the Lord to do that in a way that's so clear, so practical, and you can hold on to that. But just as you were saying, the scripture in Corinthians saying that even that we go through these problems so that we can be helpful, encouraging to others. I'm paraphrasing it terribly.
Well, that's 2 Corinthians chapter 1, yeah.
And thank you.
Yeah, and then 2 Corinthians chapter 12. In our weakness, he is strong.
Yeah.
So, all right, so you're there and you're coming to terms. So how did you even, like, start a Bible study for women?
So found out as I was there, I started realizing that I had a hope that a lot of these women didn't have. Some of these women were in prison for like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, you know, and they didn't have hope, even though, like, I was looking at, you know, the charge I had was life without the possibility of parole.
Wow. Like,
they were telling me
wow.
that I was going to be in
yeah.
prison for the rest of my life, that I was never going to hug my children again. I was only allowed to see them through bulletproof glass. And even my attorneys who were trying to appeal my case, I had like one of the best attorneys in the world. The attorney that worked on my case, it works on like people on cases for people in Guantanamo Bay, you know, and she was telling me that in general, it takes 20 to 25 years to prove someone's innocent if they've been proven guilty, and that it's like water on a rock. And I needed to be prepared for at least 25 years.
Wow.
So even if she said, I'm not going to give up, I'm going to keep trying, I'm going to prove your innocence, but it's not going to be anytime soon. So just be prepared. And I know that to be true because now I go to these Innocence Network conferences and I do these things with all these other exonerees, and I'm the baby. They tease me for having been in there so little after 7 years, which doesn't feel little to me.
No, that was a thing.
Yeah, but seven is the years of completion. God
there
said,
you go.
That was more than enough.
It does not feel little to me, but
yeah.
but they, you know, most of these people have done at least 25 years, some 40 years even, before their innocence was proven. And so, you know, I'm looking at that, and I was looking at, you know, the hope that I had of getting out in comparison to the hope of they had to have getting out. But then they didn't have any hope even when they were free.
Mm.
You know, they didn't have hope in life.
Mm. That's really insightful. That's the bottom line of it all, really. The prison that we're in without the Lord.
Okay.
We have to come back, Cheryl.
Yes, we have to come back. We're coming back with part two next week. And obviously, you don't want to miss this, right? Because Hannah's got such a testimony of God's grace. And come back.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.